With our scripture reading today, I kind of wanted to finish out Malachi. And instead of concentrating on that one, which we'll do in Bible study, it talks about a judgment day that was coming. That was referring to Christ 2,000 years ago. But we're going to concentrate on the judgment day that is coming for all the world. And one of the things is about, when we talk about heaven or hell, is that God just gives us a glimpse into the spiritual realm. And he describes it on terms that are something that we can have a basic understanding. But he describes it enough that we have a desire to go to heaven versus going to hell, if you were to actually study the subjects. And so as we cover today, we're talking about spiritual realms in the sense of heaven and hell. And we're just giving like kind of like the tip of the iceberg. We're not giving all the information or what is it exactly means. Will there be like real fire? Or we're not exactly told, but we're giving it so we can have an understanding of, hey, I don't want to go there. I want to go there. But one thing we should understand about each one is that the description, in a sense, doesn't do it justice. The description of hell barely, like I said, shows the tip of the iceberg. It's much worse than it's ever described, but we can't comprehend it, so God puts it in terms that we can get the gist of it. The same with heaven. God puts it in terms, you know, when we talk about clear streets of gold, well, gold isn't clear, and we get into all this other stuff. But he gives it so we have an understanding and appreciation and respect of both places. And so it's just kind of like a door or a window that we're looking through and we're just barely getting the edge. But it's enough to have an understanding of it. And Jeff was gracious enough that he's going to preach on one tonight. I'm going to preach on one in the morning. I'm going to preach on hell this morning, so if you want to feel uplifted and happy, you're going to have to come back tonight. So, because I think we should do both, and like I said, Jeff was kind enough to be able to preach tonight on it, and I'm very grateful for that, because I couldn't cover both in like 20, 30 minutes. But that being said, there's one thing I want to point out, is that there is going to be a separation. And in Matthew 25:31-34, and jumping down to verse 41, it talks about this separation. But when the Son of Man comes in His glory, and all the angels with Him, then He will sit on His glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before Him, and He will separate them from one another. As a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats, and he will put the sheep on his right and the goats on the left. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed of my Father, inherit a kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. So there's one part that gets to inherit a kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world, and he says, come. The other half that is separated, verse 41, it says, then he will also say to those on his left, depart from me, accursed ones, into the eternal fire which has been prepared for the devil and his angels. So one, it says, come, stay with me, make your home with me. The other says, depart from me. And so there's a clear separation that will happen on judgment day. And it will be based on how you live your life, on your deeds. Over in Revelation, verse 20, 11 through 15. And I don't know if you can see the highlighted bold words up on the screen at all. But it kind of points that out. It says, then I saw a great white throne and him who sat upon it, from whose presence earth and heaven fled away, and no place was found for them. And I saw the dead, the great and the small, standing before the throne, and the books were open. And another book was open, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged from the things which were written in the books, according to their deeds. And the sea gave up the dead which were in it, and death and Hades gave up the dead which were in them, and they were judged, every one of them, according to their deeds. Then death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire. This is the second death, the lake of fire. And if anyone's name was not found written in the book of life, he was thrown into the lake of fire. So one gets to stay after judgment with the Lord. The other is thrown in the lake of fire. They are told to depart. And so there's a clear separation. And I thought, how would I go about this? Because I've preached other lessons on heaven and hell. And I kind of wanted to do it a little different. Is we're going to talk about the place of hell itself. What does God give us a description? What it's like for people that are going to be there, and how long is it? In truth, as we go back to the basics, these are fundamentals we need to know. And too many times, I tend to hear people, you know, you'll see those little people say, well, I'm just storing up for myself real estate in hell because I'm going to buy out the whole place. I tend to hear people just make little puns like that often, and you know, they'll make jokes about it, and you know, and we'll get into that a little bit more with the next section. But in truth, when you think about where you want to go for vacation, where you want to go and spend the rest of your life, will this be on the map for you? And the first thing that we have to realize, it's a place without God. Turn over to 2 Thessalonians 1:9. And it says, these will pay the penalty of eternal destruction away from the presence of the Lord and from the glory of His power. And we're going to repeat quite a few verses throughout this. But just take a note that it's away from the presence of the Lord, from His glory, His power. And over in 1 John 1:5, what does that mean to be away from His presence? 1 John 1, verse 5, it says, this is the message we have heard from Him and announced to you, that God is light, and in Him there is no darkness at all. So one of the things we learn is that hell, the lake of fire, is a place where God has removed His presence, His glory, His everything. It's for people to stay. It's a place that is going to be without Him, and then we'll talk about a little bit without hope. Which brings us to the next one. It's a place of darkness. In Jude 13, Jude verse 13, it says, wild waves of the sea casting up their own shame like foam, wandering stars for whom black darkness has been reserved forever. And so we get this idea in the spiritual realm, God's presence, His glory, His power, everything has been removed, and it's a place of darkness. Matthew 25:30 basically says the same thing. Throw out that worthless slave into the outer darkness, in the place where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And so that's the most critical point. You're going to be there. Unlike the world, where God is present in the sense there's time there, you can pray to Him, you can repent, you can do all these other things. This is where God's not going to put any more His hand. It's a final decision. Well, the next thing that should be noticed is that in Matthew 13, 42, it tells us that it's like a furnace. In Matthew 13, 42, it says, I will throw them into the furnace of fire. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And we're not talking about a campfire, you know, where you roast your marshmallows or anything like that. The idea of a furnace is the idea of where you might do metal work, where you might bake bricks back in the old days, whatever it may be. Or it talks about in Revelation, I didn't have it down here, but it talks about Jesus' feet being burnished bronze. They had just come out of the furnace and they're flaming hot, they're glowing. We're talking about a furnace that is meant to heat something to extreme temperatures. Something that's very unpleasant. It's not like a, like I said, a campfire where you can run your hand through the fire and you're going to be okay. In a furnace, you don't do that. You'll lose your hand. So it gives this idea that there is a furnace fire. It's a place that is going to be hot. It's not going to, it's a place that is unbearable. The next thing, as we put at the top, is the lake of fire. And there's a couple reasons for this. In Revelation 20, 15, you probably can mark Revelation 20 because we'll jump back there a couple times. But Revelation 20, 15, it says, "And if anyone's name was not found written in the book of life, he was thrown into the lake of fire." Why a lake? You ever thought about that? Why does it say a lake? Why not just say the land of fire? Well, one, lake is the idea that it can hold amounts of people. Maybe not in Nebraska, obviously. Your lakes are kind of like super small. But you go to Washington, you go to other states that have huge lakes. It means it's a big amount, but what else? What else does a lake do? It holds something. And with lakes, you get immersed in it. And that's the idea of a lake. One, it can hold a lot, but also it holds something inside of it. In Revelation, just a couple of verses back, in verse 10, it says, "And the devil who deceived them was thrown into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are also, and they will be tormented day and night, forever and ever." Brimstone is another word for sulfur. And an idea of sulfur is that you light it on fire. It gives off a stench of like when you hit a match. It kind of goes in your nostrils, that smell when you light a match. But also one of the things that it does, it gives off a blue flame when it burns. And on top of that, when you burn sulfur, it turns to like magma sulfur. And it just kind of boils and it goes over there. So what's being described is a lake full of fire and the brimstone, sulfur's on fire, and it kind of comes to like magma, basically, of that thing. If you've ever seen like something that bubbles, you know, like water, you don't want to stick your hand in there. The idea, and then the sulfur kind of turns red, and it burns, and it burns, and it burns, and it lasts quite a long time. Sulfur is very unpleasant. There's smoke that comes up from it. But you ask, okay, well, that's what hell is described as a place. And a lot of people are like, well, it's still okay. There's going to be some type of relief there or something of the sort. And I tend to hear people say, is hell really that bad? Well, just by the place alone, it's not somewhere where it's like, hey, I'm going to spend, you know, $4,000 and go take a vacation. It's not one of those places you say, I never want to go there. There's places on earth that we say, I never want to go there. And it doesn't even compare. In Washington, we have a volcano, Mount Rainier. If that was exploding, I don't want to be up on top of it. It's not a very pleasant feeling or a thing that will happen to you. When I lived in South America, I lived about 7 miles away from a volcano that was exploding day and night. Not the smartest thing, obviously. But you could see the magma running down it, and you could see it. And it kind of gave me an idea when I thought about it. I was like, oh, would that what hell would be like? I was still like 7 or 8 miles away, but there's a chance that it could actually exploding even more and some other issues. But I was there for about 2 months and in that area. And it was interesting because everybody there was ready to flee from the volcano got worse. Everybody was ready to flee from that consequence that was there. And so people make puns. Is hell really that bad? Well, absolutely yes. I remember like seeing a Far Side comic strip when I was like 15. And it shows people coming out of the lake of fire and they have like bathing suits on and they're coming up and a guy's pouring coffee and I think he drinks if I remember right. And he goes, oh, they thought of everything in hell. Even the coffee is cold. You know, and people make those jokes, but when you really compare it to reality, it kind of becomes sad because people are trying to make light of it. The first thing that we have to notice, if we turn over to Revelation 14, verse 11, and it says, "And the smoke of their torment goes up forever and ever, and they have no rest day and night, those who worship the beast and his image, and whoever receives the mark of his name." And there's no rest. You know, one of the things that I always like to point out, you know, usually like between Sunday morning service and Sunday night service, there's kind of that point where I'm like, okay, maybe I can sleep for an hour, you know, get myself back up and awake, and then I'll be ready for night service. Or have you ever ran quite a few miles and you feel exhausted and you're like, I just got to sit down for a second? But imagine a place where you don't ever really get that rest, but it just gets worse and worse. And there's no condition that will give you, revive you. No condition that will renew you as a person. But it just, you're exhausted and it just gets worse and worse. Over in Revelation 20:10 that we read, or already read it, but notice the reason why for no rest. It says towards the end, "And they will be tormented day and night forever and ever." The reason why you're not getting rest day and day out is because you're being tormented. It's a place where there's no stop to it. It's a continuous thing. The next part, we talked a little bit about it, is sulfur or brimstone. The idea of sulfur is that its fumes create, one, not a great smell, and two, it creates a suffocation effect. I think that's why God uses it, is because it has certain attributes to it that kind of gives us an idea. Hell is described as a place that you'll have a choking, a suffocation, and it burns the eyes. If there's too much of it, there's a whole lake. Not only that, as I said, it turns into molten sulfur as it burns. And as a kid, I used to have a bad habit of, when I lived with my grandparents, our whole family did, and I'd go burn the trash. And at times things would happen when I try to mix things together. An explosion happened this one time, and out of there came boiling hot plastic, and it landed on my arm. And I looked down and it's just bubbling. And I'm like, oh, the nerves are going to take effect in a second. You know, and that burnt me. And I remember going crying to my mom. I was like 12 years old or something. And that pain alone, when you feel that frying your skin, the idea that it's stuck there, and I couldn't remove it. What happened is after a day or two, we had to peel it off and underneath. But the idea of that there's a lake full of that type of issue, of that sulfur, and that you're going to be thrown into it, as it says, isn't a very pleasant feeling. And it doesn't go away. There's no rest from that torment. There's no rest from the suffocation. There's no rest from anything. The next thing is, death is described. And people, a lot of people read Mark 9, but I'm going to read Isaiah 66:24. And it says, "Then they will go forth and look on the corpses of the men who have transgressed against me. For their worm will not die, and their fire will not be quenched, and they will be abhorrence to all mankind." And it's quoted in Mark when it's talking about eternal judgment. One of the things is, the idea of a worm is there's like a decay and the worm eats, and then the fire that you burn bodies with, and it consumes, but it'll never end, as it's put. They're never satisfied. So it's talking about the idea of death, but it's an ongoing thing. It's an idea of constant being consumed by something, but yet never fully being consumed. I think enough of enough of us, at least maybe in our past, have watched movies where it has hell in there and there's people being, it's not a correct description, but being tortured but yet never dying. That kind of idea that's being put out there. And so it gives us an idea that there's something that's always consuming in hell. The next part is that there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. And we read Matthew 20. We read a couple verses already about that. But it's described in Matthew 13, starting in verse 41. And it says, "The Son of Man will send forth his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all the stumbling blocks and those who commit lawlessness, and will throw them into the furnace of fire. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." How bad is it for someone not wanting to go there? It's using a figure of speech about cutting off your arm or your leg. It's better to lose that now than in eternity to suffer with your whole body in hell, is basically what it's saying. It's better to get rid of that sin and sacrifice that every area of your life versus going there, because there's going to be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So there's torment, there's no rest, and because of that, there is weeping. We've all weeped before for whatever reason. But there's also gnashing of teeth. Gnashing of teeth means something because of great pain, of great agony, of great sorrow, and also of anger. When Stephen was martyred, they gnashed their teeth at him. So there's all those different concepts that can be put into here, is that there's an idea of weeping, but also of great sorrow, pain. So there's an emotional aspect being put into that. The worst part about, I would say, is, besides their God not being there, is that there's a reminder of one's sins in the spiritual realm. Luke 16 is not talking about hell, but it's talking about the spiritual realm. And we're not going to read it, but one thing is that the rich man remembers his sins of the past. He remembers those things that he had done, the life that he lived, and why he was at the place he was. And I think it brings about an idea that people forget, is that the people that have God's judgment against them, there is no desire for them to, for you to go to the same place when you read that story. But just think about it. You're in a place of such agony, there's no rest, there's weeping, gnashing of teeth. It's not a place that you're going to hang out with your buddies and have a good time. It's not anything like that. It's not a place that you'll ever get used to. You know, as we get older, we get used to pains in our bodies, right? I have bad shoulders, somewhat of a bad back. I go hiking, my left knee gives out. I deal with the pain as I get along with it. And sometimes that pain is just constant. But I deal with it. This place is describing a place where you don't deal with it. It just happens to you, and it doesn't ever get better. You never become numb to it. It's a place where it's always weeping. It's always the gnashing of teeth. There's no rest. And there's a reminder of why you are there. And that's a little bit scary to think about, is that you'll know why, that I had all these chances to follow God, but now there's eternity there. We covered the rest of these verses, I think, already, at least most of them. How long does hell last, and how long does the punishment last? And there's a lot of opinions out there. If you look at the world, I've met a lot of people that go, well, actually recently I had someone say to me, bring up the idea that there's what we call total annihilation, or there really isn't a hell. That you don't suffer in hell, God just obliterates you, and that's it. There's many other thought processes out there. There's a lot of people who claim to be Christian and go, they basically say, well, what is hell? That's just a way to get you scared and to believe in God. Well, the truth is, hell is God mentions it is because it's supposed to scare you. It's supposed to bring about a fear and also respect that you don't want to go there. There's no hiding that. I openly admit to people. That's why Jesus came, is to keep you from that place. But how long does hell last, and how long will we be there if you do go there? We read Jude 13, but it's a place of eternal darkness. It's something that lasts forever. God has made a place, such as hell, to last for an eternity. It's an eternal darkness where there is no hope. God's presence has been removed. And that darkness will last forever. The thing about darkness and God's prayer being removed also is that people could pray there, but it won't matter. There's nothing to change their situation. The next thing is, we already read it, but the worm and fire are always consuming, which means there is no end to the suffering. There's no end. You'll never be completely obliterated, as some claim. There's always a consuming of the fire. There's no quenching it. It's everlasting, as Matthew 25:41 says also. Oh, which we read. Did I read that one? Yes, we did. It talks about it being an eternal fire. So when you get this idea is, okay, well, the physical, not the physical, but the spiritual place is supposed to last for eternity. And then at the end, it also, in Matthew 25:46, it talks about it being for eternity, not just as the place itself, but for the people who are there. Verse 46, it says, these will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. Just like heaven will be eternal, and people will stay there for eternity, so will the punishment be. It'll be everlasting. It's something that is always ongoing. And sometimes we can't really comprehend what it means to the end of eternity, because there is no end. But I've only been alive 32 years, and I can't imagine a place like that and being there 5 minutes, let alone for forever. As kids would say, infinity upon infinity. It's something that is supposed to scare you and realize the consequences of our sin. In 2 Thessalonians 1:9, again, it says, these will pay the penalty of eternal destruction away from the presence of the Lord and from the glory of His power. The idea of eternal destruction, it means to bring to ruin, not to completely annihilate, but to bring to ruin, that you're going to be devastated, you're going to be ruined for eternity. How long does the destruction last for you? It's eternal. Something that will never go away. And that's what makes me sad, was when people say, well, me and my buddy, well, I'm just going to be with everyone else I know in hell. And I'm like, you really don't understand what God has warned us about. You really don't understand. And it brings a refresher to mind, is that not only for our own salvation, but for those around us, if it's for your kids, when they get grown up enough to be able to make a decision where you want them to be and how you diligently plant the word in their lives, or if it's for your coworkers, or if it's for your different parts of your family, or maybe you have an unbelieving spouse. Those who don't follow God, this is what waits for them. Not just for your own salvation are you should be worried about, but it should bring an idea of, you know, like, I'll get to it next week. I'll get to it then. And you keep pushing off when you want to tell someone about the truth. But this is what waits for them. It should be an urgency inside of us. It brings about a sorrow in ourselves that people are actually going to be there, and we want to keep them from that. In truth, there's always two paths. We kind of talked about it in class today, actually. There's always two paths that you can choose. Let's turn over to Matthew 7:13-14. Matthew 7, 13 through 14. It says, enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide, and the way that is broad that leads to destruction, and there are many who enter through it. For the gate is a small, and the way is narrow that leads to life, and there are few who find it. We talked about Bible class today. There is no middle ground with God. There is either you follow Him, or you don't. There will be a separation on how you lived your life. And I know everybody's prayer here is that everyone here goes to heaven. And that is always my prayer. That is always my hope. And I encourage you throughout the week, is look upon people in this way of where are they going? Where is their salvation at? And can I do anything to affect it and bring about heaven instead of hell for them? So if there's anyone here today that is not a Christian, I'd encourage you is that God has sent His Son to die on the cross to forgive your sins. And He warns us about hell that He does not want you there. But you do have to make that choice to follow Him and become a child of God. But there's someone here today that's going down the wrong road and they know it and they haven't repented. Or maybe you have struggles and you just need the prayers of the brothers and sisters in Christ here. Whatever that need is, we encourage you to come forward as we stand and sing the song that's been selected.